Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record program number 494, another conversation with Daniel Hopsicker about electoral fraud. This has been recorded on January 9th of the year 2005. Once again, it's my pleasure and privilege to bring back to our airwaves Daniel Hopsicker. Daniel, welcome back.
Hey, happy to be with you.
All righty, we've been tracing a concatenation running through organized crime, gambling initiatives in Florida, gambling initiatives in Louisiana, and evidentiary tributaries running between these. We've taken a look at the Clark family. Deborah Clark, appointed head of elections in Pinellas County by Jeb Bush. Her husband, Richard Clark, working for an apparently competing system, ES&S. He says there's no conflict of interest, but one could raise questions. We've also taken a look at other links between the other conflicts of interest involving assistance to Deborah Clark. One of the things that we noted, well, we were talking about the scandals in Louisiana and the situation down there. A fellow named Phil Foster, also an official with Sequoia Voting Systems, and later Richard Clark goes to Birmingham, Alabama, and that's where Phil Foster is involved. I wonder if you could just briefly detail Phil Foster and his indictment in the scheme in Louisiana, and now he winds up in Birmingham, Alabama, along with Richard Clark.
Well, he was in Birmingham, and he and Richard Clark work for the two major competing companies, supposedly, but they don't compete, one for ES&S and one for Sequoia Pacific. But the strange thing is after all of the publicity that Foster got, probably put him out of commission, Richard Clark moved to Birmingham, Alabama, which is where Phil Foster is based. So, I mean, it almost looks as if one company is supporting another, but, you know, of course, I couldn't prove that, and probably it's just conspiracy talk.
Well, it certainly is very interesting when you see all these people and institutions dovetailing with one another, and all of this in the context of not only deeply corrupt elections, but bodies begin to pile up. We noted Tony Giambaluca, the alleged suicide in the Louisiana gambling initiative and the corruption there involving Sequoia, and Jerry Fowler. And we've seen this before. I noted a guy named Ethan Gibbs died under strained circumstances in Texas after developing a traceable electronic voting system. And in Wayne Madsen's series about electoral fraud, there's also another suspicious suicide as well. So bodies begin to pile up. Florida, a lot of problems in 2000, a lot of problems in 2004.
Well, they're only problems for people like you and I, Dave. We're looking at a very efficient operation for the people who were involved in it, certainly. I mean, I think they all got bonuses, don't you?
I'd say they're doing very nicely for themselves. You know,
they don't view it as a problem.
No, they view, I guess, those
but,
troublesome
but
individuals.
There are so many individual stories, some of which we've already retailed, okay, that add up to two clear facts, as far as I can tell. And one is that the way they stole the election is by buying up the companies which count the votes and then bribing anything that moves. Yeah, I mean, there are so many instances in support of those two conclusions that a courageous prosecuting attorney, a federal prosecuting attorney, probably maybe someone like that Democrat that used to be in New York, if he's not still, or Morgenstern, whatever, could make a case that what we were looking at here was a continuing criminal enterprise, which would fall under the RICO statutes.
No doubt about it. In past programs, not some of our conversations, Anna, but I've noted the incestuous relationship between ES&S and Diebold, and one of the things that you've traced in your series is the same sort of relationship that appears to obtain between Sequoia and ES&S. We noted that at the same time that Deborah Clark was securing Sequoia machines for Pinellas County, which then began counting backward after 32,000 votes, her husband was working for ES&S, and that in turn, when her husband goes to Birmingham, Alabama, we've got him in the same neighborhood as Phil Foster, who's working for Sequoia and who gets indicted in the Louisiana gambling scheme that we talked about earlier.
Sure. And if you look at how these companies pass from hand to hand, you can clearly see that the same interests continue to control them. And these interests, I hesitate to say this because, you know, here you get into this wacky territory, but these interests are integrated on an international level. So you find a man from ES&S at a conference in Ireland hosted at a country club owned by the owner of Sequoia Pacific, for example.
That's Michael Smurfit, right?
Yes. See, these companies bring unwanted publicity, which is why IBM got out of the election business early in the 60s, okay? So when you are a large international company that has been asked to own for a while one of these election companies, and you get nervous when you see what's going on, you know, and you realize that you are perhaps ultimately liable. So they get passed like hot potatoes from hand to hand. So Sequoia was owned by Smurfit, which had a multi-billion-dollar paper factory in Cali, Colombia, but that's probably purely coincidental, and was sold several years ago because Smurfit was under all kinds of... Smurfit's under indictment in Spain. He was shown to be bribing two separate prime ministers of Ireland, okay? This is the kind of stuff that goes on. So they sold the company to another company that supposedly looks like it's pristine, but it's not. It's De La Rue, and this is a company out of London that prints the central bank notes for the Bank of England.
You mentioned that last week, and you know what I'd like to do? Let's hold the international connections here for just a second, because I'd like I'd like to tie in a couple of more things down, you know, back in the USA, so to speak, and then maybe we can sort of using a metaphor, begin dollying the camera out backwards, and we'll see how some of these things fit into a globalized network of corruption. We were talking about Sequoia and ES&S, supposedly competing companies, but in fact, we find them basically integrated in a way that seems strange for alleged competitors. In the article, Fraud by Computer in Florida, again, December 14th, 2004, you note the following, and I'm going to read this for the benefit of the listeners so they can see just how funky some of this stuff gets. Now, remember, Jerry Fowler got in debt at Harrah's in Las Vegas, and then that in turn put a leash on him, and then when there was a gambling initiative in New Orleans to put, among other things, Harrah's on the ballot, bring a Harrah's into being down there, Jerry Fowler was in bed with Pasquale Rocco Risi, the Sequoia representative down there. We've talked about that. Back to Las Vegas, you write, back in 1993 and 4, many observers wondered why new Clark County Elections Chief Catherine Ferguson would commit what turned out to be tens of millions of dollars in expenditures to adopt Sequoia Pacific's electronic voting machines. Now, this is in Las Vegas. Then you write, so determined was Ms. Ferguson to buy the Sequoia machines for Las Vegas that a former member of Elections Department team stated Ferguson resorted to the simple exigency of having Sequoia Pacific's representative send a list of bid specifications designed so that Sequoia's machines were the only ones that could meet them. Okay, now that's fascinating. And then, skipping down, you write, today, Catherine Ferguson is ES&S's chief spokesman. Now, that is very interesting indeed, and if one examines that in parallel with Richard Clark and Phil Foster, it sort of suggests an element of closure there as well.
Well, you know, there's a couple of other researchers in this field who I respect, you know, quite a bit, who I've been reading, you know, since the 2000 election, and one of them's Lynn Landis, who's a woman out of Philadelphia. I wish she would write a New Yorker style profile of Catherine Ferguson. I'll bet that would be an interesting piece.
At the very least, I think we can say that Catherine Ferguson knows how to do business.
She's the Johnny Appleseed of electronic voting. She's sprinkled it everywhere, and she came out of Texas, strangely enough.
Catherine Ferguson.
San Antonio.
Fascinating. All roads lead to Texas. Another indication of just how Byzantine some of this gets, in your article, Election Company Has Long Criminal History, you write about how Sequoia seems to use front companies. I'm just going to read this again for the benefit of the listeners because it's tortuous. Another discovery was that, like the CIA, Sequoia Pacific operates through a number of dummy front companies. For example, two Florida election execs, Glenn Board and Ralph Escudero, pled guilty to conspiracy to compound a felony, public bribery, who had owned a paper voting machine company called Unilect, which was just a front for Sequoia Pacific. Pasquale Rocco Risi's company, International Voting Machines, was also really Sequoia Pacific. So, too, was Harold Webb's Garden State Elections, and also Herb Webb's Electech. Webb, a New Jersey elections equipment executive who participated in the bribery and kickback scheme that resulted in the conviction of Fowler, that again is back in Louisiana, also played a key role in the infamous Martin County, Florida drama over Republican absentee ballots in the 2000 election. So not only does that indicate there's the Byzantine and obviously to a certain extent deliberately deceptive nature of this, But it's interesting you mentioned that, like the CIA, they have this stuff. Let's review another element before we dolly back and we bring in Hilliard and Khashoggi.
Let me just add one quick thing to that. Hasn't come forward quite yet, but is about to. You were talking about Harold Webb from Garden City, New Jersey, okay? Well, the company that was given the contract to count American servicemen's vote overseas, which was owned by Saudi billionaires in Bermuda, mm-hmm. before being sold to the people who made the $13 billion Enron ripoff possible, the former Arthur Andersen, domiciled now offshore in Bermuda. That gentleman, Harold, that company is also out of Garden City.
Oh, fascinating. How fascinating indeed.
Probably just a coincidence.
Well, I'm sure this is all just a coincidence. And those of us who are paranoid conspiracy theorists who can't figure out anything better to do than sit around and try to invent conspiracies. You know, it just... It's too bad that there's people like us. Anyway, moving ahead, let's talk about Martin County briefly. You mentioned it in another of your articles back in the USSR. You mentioned a fellow named Charlie Kane. Charlie Kane in the CIA, Charlie Kane in the Ukraine, Charlie Kane in St. Martin's, Florida. Tell us about that, if you would.
Well, anybody that's interested, Charlie Kane had a key role in the 2000 Florida vote snafu.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anybody type in Charles Kane and 2000 election, and then you'll come up with a couple hundred articles. So he was an actor there, and doing some research on him this year, I discovered that he had been sent to the Ukraine several years ago, actually 1996, at U.S. taxpayers' expense, to teach those feckless Ukrainians how to start a democracy. So Charlie Kane was a former CIA official, and not a top official. He was in charge of, I believe, the security division. A former CIA top official is sent to the Ukraine to teach them about democratic processes in 96, then comes back here and subverts the democratic process in the year 2000, helping put George W. Bush in the White House. And, you know, that's probably just a coincidence, too.
He was chairman of the Bush-Cheney campaign in Martin County. You have to ask.
Yeah. I mean, it is fair to ask what credentials as a small-D Democrat any former CIA official has. Because by definition, a spy agency serves only one master, and that's certainly not the people. So, I mean, they're set up, the democracy is not what the CIA is about, and probably not, nor should it be. But, when a former CIA official turns election expert, you know, I mean, if in a free country, Bob Woodward would be all over it, Carl Bernstein maybe, you know, I mean, where are those people, in the 20-something 30-something generation of today, you know, where are those people? They aren't there, and the reason they aren't there is because, you know, it's not quite a free country anymore.
No, we're certainly going down the wrong road. Charlie Kane, of course, ex-CIA, works in the Ukraine in 96. Chairman of the Bush-Cheney campaign in Martin County, works with a fellow named Hauk, Thomas Hauk, I believe, and they're basically doctoring up absentee ballots, which should have been disqualified, but then weren't. And you note in your piece back in the USSR that in Martin County, Bush carried that county 56-44% in 2000, but the absentee ballots were well over 2-1 in favor of Bush, and that is what Charlie Kane was working on. Of course, we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that George W. Bush is the son of George H.W. Bush, for whom CIA headquarters is named.
And that's another mystery, isn't it? Because in George Sr.'s official resume, he was only head of the CIA and only officially associated during his entire lifetime for 10 months with the CIA. 10 months.
Allegedly.
And yet the CIA campus is named for him. So he must have been the best 10-month director any company has ever had. Either that, or the official story about the life of our, whatever he was, 41st president of the United States, is a lie. Mm-hmm. What do you think? Which, you know, take a guess.
Well, there are obviously a number of books that develop arguments that, in fact, George Bush had been working for the intelligence community, probably CIA, possibly even its predecessor, OSS, from the time he got out of Yale. Two of them that come to mind just off the top of my head: Secret War Against the Jews by John Loftus and Mark Arons, and Kevin Phillips' American Dynasty, which was published last year, suggests the same thing.
You mention it, and I know this is going to be a slight digression from what you know the logical progression of what we're talking about, but a slight digression of people who've been working for the CIA since they got out of Yale. Another guy is Porter Goss.
Mm-hmm.
Also from Florida, Sanibel Island, Florida, who appears on the cover of Barry and the Boys. He's a new CIA director, for anyone that doesn't know. And he's appears in a nightclub photograph of the CIA's super-secret Operation 40 Assassination Squad in a picture taken in a Mexico City nightclub in 1961.
Actually, January 21st, 1963, wasn't it?
No. Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Yes.
Because that was very shortly before, obviously, 10 months before President Kennedy was killed. And a number of the people at that table figure in that general milieu. And you note William Seymour, who was alleged to be an Oswald double. And also Frank Sturgis, the Watergate burglar. His name crops up in connection with President Kennedy's assassination as well. He was then calling himself Frank Fiorini shortly after JFK was killed. The FBI got a letter to Oswald, supposedly from a Cuban intelligence agent named Pedro Charles, and they also had received a warning letter warning that Cuban intelligence had been recruiting Oswald for a job that required top marksmanship. When they compared them, it turned out both letters, both the warning letter and the alleged letter from Pedro Charles, were typed on the same typewriter, and the source for that story was none other than Frank Fiorini, a.k.a. Frank Sturgis. So this gets to be a real interesting a group of folks. Now, as we dolly the camera out, by the way, we talk about Porter Goss in For the Record 483, and there's a lot of information on your website. As we begin dollying out from Louisiana, from Las Vegas, from Florida, and some of the things we've talked about, we see these same cast of characters, plus good old Adnan Khashoggi, coming into play in the context not only of election fraud, but of an international, or as one of your contacts spoke when speaking of Rudy Deckers, transnational. Wally Hilliard, fill us in quick again who he was, and how does he intersect with Adnan Khashoggi?
Isn't this amazing? I mean, what I'm about to tell you should be on the front page of the Washington Post, or it's just an amazing fact. The guy that owned the flight school that both terrorist pilots supposedly came here to go to school at, the guy that owned the flight school when they got here, whose Learjet got confiscated with 43 pounds of heroin on board same month they got here, that guy at that same time, during that same time, was involved in a diplomatic opening to Cuba. A diplomatic opening that saw him carrying a paper bag full of presidential Rolexes with the diamond beveled face down to top Fidel Castro lieutenants, and the Madcap Morning News came into possession of that photograph a few weeks ago, courtesy of a disgruntled associate. And thank God for disgruntled associates, otherwise we would know nothing about the people that run our country and probably the world.
And that was Mr. Tiller, of course.
Yes, it is.
Yes, indeed. And Hilliard is tied in with, you mentioned that Hilliard is working, it was Rum Cay, I believe it is, an island in the Caribbean, which is the focal point of activities by Hilliard and Adnan Khashoggi. Can you tell us about that briefly?
Well, his Learjet was flying weekly over to Rum Cay in support of one faction in what looks a lot like a drug war over a new airstrip that can handle jets that has been built on this isolated tiny little island on the backside of the Bahamas. The two factions involved. One faction represents the current party in power in the Bahamas, and the other faction represents the party that's not in power. Hilliard's jet was flying for Khashoggi's faction, which also wants to build a casino on the island.
and also allegedly in the Gaza Strip as well. Now, we've got Hilliard and Adnan Khashoggi involved again with quasi-organized crime-related activities. We've talked about Hilliard and drug dealing and in the past. And we're noting once again the gambling theme cropping up once again, that gambling appears to be a focal point of some of the activities that Khashoggi and Hilliard are involved with on Rum K. Now, Adnan Khashoggi and the aforementioned Election.com, a mysterious company run by Saudi billionaires, and also Adnan Khashoggi and a lot of different companies named Triad. Tell us about that, because here again we're bringing Khashoggi in this transnational, globalized milieu once again into the context of election fraud.
Well, the election story in Ohio has not been my story, I mean, because I've been in Florida. But the company, the election company, fingered in the majority of the suspected fraud in Ohio is a company called Triad Governmental Services, which was founded in 1983 in Florida, in Palm Beach, Florida. And that company, and so, you know, anyone that wants to, like, look into, you know, who these people are being accused of election fraud, you know, needs to look into who that company is. But what you find is not much, and no one appears to be questioning whether this company had anything to do with another consortium of companies which was active at the same place in the same time, Adnan Khashoggi's Triad. As I understand it, and you know, I was never in that class, covert operations operate under code names, and a long-running operation might be called, say, Silverado, and encompass, you know, there would be Silverado Savings and Loans here, and Silverado Bank here, and, you know, Silverado Associates, you know, on the corner, and, you know, that's how those guys all knew that they were, you know, working on the same thing. Triad is a similar name. I mean, it's inescapable that Triad was involved in major corruption that was occurring right at the time this company was founded in Louisville, where Sally Denton's book fingered a Triad Farms owned by Khashoggi as being at the center of the first major nationwide cocaine smuggling organization known as the Company.
And by the way, that's covered in, for the record, in RFA program number 26. We go into
You got to it way before I did, buddy.
Well, I was talking about the company in the early 1980s, back in my old The Hard Rain series.
Then stand up and take a bow. Stand up and take a bow. I mean, that's pretty amazing. That's pretty amazing. That's something that I learned about in, 2000 or 2001, you know, or a little earlier because of looking into Barry Seal. You knew about 15 or 20 years earlier.
Well, it is a very, very interesting series of characters. And when you begin studying the company, you come across the assassination of a federal judge whose name I forget offhand, and Charles Harrelson, Woody Harrelson from Cheers, right. Dad was convicted in that. And when you start studying those, some of the organized crime associates surrounding Jack Ruby, people like Carlos Marcello, with whom you're no doubt familiar from your investigations in Louisiana, a lot of the same names start cropping back up in connection with the company. Now,
so you have an election company. Look,
right.
If Ohio had gone for Kerry, John Kerry would be president, right?
Sure.
And in Ohio, all of the, you know, the majority of the fraud, I mean, Triad counts over half the votes there.
Mm-hmm.
So this company is critical to how the 2004 election turned out.
Absolutely. And again, Triad is...
No one has asked whether it's associated or was at one time associated with Adnan Khashoggi's Triad. It's astounding.
It's obviously this is one of those points that needs to be investigated and closed further. We have about 3 minutes left, Daniel. Election.com, Bermuda, wealthy Saudi billionaires. Tell us about that.
They were counting American overseas votes, and when it was revealed that Saudi billionaires, including very likely Adnan Khashoggi, were in charge of counting American servicemen's votes, you know, this after September 11th, they quickly sold the company. And you know what? The probably the only encouraging thing I can say in this whole little interview of ours is there must not be a whole range. I mean, it's not like they own everything, okay? Because when they had to sell election.com to get it out of where it was parked with the Saudis, they sold it to a company with probably the worst record for fraud in 20th and 21st century America, Accenture, headquartered in Bermuda, which used to be Arthur Andersen, which made possible $13 billion worth of fraud at Enron.
So that is a fascinating evolution there. From election.com, unnamed Saudi billionaires, then it moves to Accenture, which is sort of the graduate school for Enron alumni.
Can I finish with a prediction here?
Absolutely.
In the year 2008, a state which has been traditionally, historically Democratic, and recently closely Democratic, Wisconsin, will vote for whoever the Republican will go to the Republican candidate.
Right.
Accenture has just won a contract in Wisconsin to clean their voting rolls.
Oh, well, that ought to be then they should truly be the picture of antisepsis. We've just got about a minute left here. One thing I want to note in passing, too, in your article back in the USSR, one of the things you point out, we're talking about Ohio, we've been talking about Florida. In the 2004 election, Warren County, Ohio, was the focal point of a, quote, terror alert, unquote, which resulted in the evacuation of key facilities. And also down in Tallahassee, what was supposed to be a ticking bomb or something like that, turned out it was a bunch of papers being blown by an air vent. But once again, there was a very timely strategic evacuation of a key election facility. And exactly what happened in Warren County, Ohio, after that terror alert, and exactly what happened in Tallahassee after that terror alert remains to be determined precisely. Nespa?
Yes, but in defense of officials, they did protect Florida's quilt collection, which was where the papers were rustling. So at least our security officials are on top of the situation when it comes to historic quilts.
Okay, well, at least we can draw a clean breath on that. Danny, we're out of time. Tell us about Mad Cow Prod and where people...
MadCowProd.com, and if we move down here month to month, okay? The only thing we sell are the two books I've done and five documentaries, and we're in production now on one on the election. And on another one on 9/11 called Welcome to Terrorland. So we need support of people that are interested in, you know, hearing what it is we're able to dig up.
And there are also
and thank you to those of you who have supported us and anyone listening and anyone interested. You know, that's it.
Yep, and of course the articles that I've been in some cases excerpting and referring to are available also on your website as well. Now, don't forget sister station WFMU in Jersey City, New Jersey. They're archiving the For the Record programs on Real Audio. More recent programs available at www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery. And if you want to tell people about some of the interviews that I've done with Daniel Hopsicker, they are archived on Real Audio so they can listen to them for themselves. Also, the Spitfire website, www.spitfirelist.com, has thousands of pages, several thousand pages of printed documentation, links, lists of the various lectures and programs that are available from Spitfire. And plus, a new feature now, in addition to the PDF file for Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, we now have that book scanned into HTML as well. So people can access that book on PDF or on HTML. This concludes For the Record program number 494, another interview with Daniel Hopsicker about electoral fraud. This is being recorded on January 9th of the year 2005. For Daniel Hopsicker, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.